All right, hello, and welcome to episode number 115 of the Three Drinks In podcast. I am your host, Vince. Over there is Phil.
Hey.
There's Phil. In this episode, we're waiting for Miss Emilia Clarke to show up and talk about her role in the newest Star Wars film, Solo, A Star Wars Story. Before we do that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search for Three Drinks In Podcast. You'll easily find us. Click subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Three Drinks In Pod. That's at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. Like us on Facebook and email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. All right. Is everybody ready?
Yep.
Okie dokie, here we go.
Well, you've come to the right place. I'm Han Solo, captain of the Millennium Falcon, and the only actor whose career isn't destroyed by this movie.
Is it a fast ship?
Are you kidding? It's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs.
Isn't a parsec a unit of distance, not time?
Wait. Chewie, take these guys to the ship and get her ready.
Always gargle before a takeoff. Waka waka. All right, let's go.
And we're live.
Synchronize your watches.
Yes. So I went so far as to buy my ticket to the film on Fandango. Mm-hmm. And my local theater just got Fandango, or at least just got the option to prepay for tickets there. And I, you know, every other theater in the world now, you just hold your phone up and the guy takes out a little thing and boop, scans it, and you go in. They forgot to buy those things, I guess. So I walked up to the ticket guy with my phone, and he's like, yeah, no, you got to go over there. I went, what for? He's like, I can't do that. I'm like, all right. And I had to go over there and like argue with them about the confirmation number, which I don't have because I don't normally need it when I do this. It's very frustrating.
You know, they didn't get the Fandango starter pack. We went there and I got I did the same thing, but I got an email and I'm putting my credit card in the machine. Of course, only one of them works out of, 50. So everyone's online behind me and the credit card just wasn't swiping. I was like, you know what? I'll put the confirmation code in because I had the email.
There you go.
And thank God that worked because people were getting pretty testy and, I mean, why have those kiosks? They never work.
Yeah, you'd figure it would be easier or rather cheaper to pay fewer people to do the whole ticket thing than it would be just to maintain those little computers. Like, that's hire one guy to fix the machine as opposed to hiring 10 people to stand behind the counter and take your money. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, and what's
that?
Which theater did you go to? The one in Nanuet?
See, now that I'm thinking of a different movie I saw recently. What was the first one we saw? Deadpool. I had this problem.
Oh, okay.
So when I went to go see Solo, I went to the 9:15 a.m. showing. It was me and like 8 other people. Jesus. I've never been to a movie that early in my life.
That's really early.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about the girl who works the ticket booth at the one in Nanuet, like she's still behind glass and has to talk to you through a microphone. Why is that exactly?
Do you want a ticket to Solo? Like, yes, I would like a ticket to. Well, when you're that early, they're behind the concession stand. Like, they're not even manning the glass booth.
Right, but why have a glass booth? Like, there's still a locked door, so it isn't like the cash drawer is sitting out. There's literally no reason for there to be a partition between you and the person you're buying the ticket from.
Yeah, it's like when I look and I see the arcade games in the corner, and I'm always like, why are those even there anymore? I've never seen anybody playing them.
I think kids do.
They do? I don't have kids.
Not a lot. I mean, my kid doesn't. He's 2.
Yeah, well, but I never see anybody in them. So wasting valuable energy and resources.
That's probably true. Speaking of wasting energy and resources,
this podcast,
it's killing time before Miss Clark gets here. Not here yet.
She's busy filming Game of Thrones.
In the nude.
No, she took that out of her contract. Yeah, she's rich and famous now. She doesn't have to get naked.
It's the first thing she did in the show. The first thing she did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
No. Good for her.
Yeah.
So, but while we're waiting, we'll just sort of get started here.
Okay. What did you think of Solo, a Star Wars story?
I keep thinking about what you said when we talked about this last. I think we did a micro episode for the newest trailer that had come out for it a few weeks ago, and I remember being kind of jazzed about it, and like, the first trailer stunk, and the second trailer was like, oh, this is a better marketing, little small film for marketing for this movie. I kind of got more excited about it, and you were just like, yeah, but it's just so unnecessary.
Did I say that? That sounds like something I would say.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that. You know, you're in good company. I mean, look, I liked it. It was fine. And that's become a very sort of standard response for movies like Wonder Woman that are not great, but are competently executed, and they're not also terrible, like, you know, the Justice League, where things don't make any sense and it looks shitty, and, you know, there's all kinds of obvious problems that make it difficult to sit through for the entirety of the movie. And that's, you know, so saying that something was fine is saying that you've cleared a very low bar in my head. But, you know, overall, you know, I thought they did a decent job given the task that they were assigned. So, like, things that were good was, like, it had a pretty obvious three-act structure, which was nice. Sometimes you don't get that in these movies because you got to shoehorn a lot of junk in there. But, no, this was pretty clear. You know, the beginning was weaker in terms of structure than the ending was. But it was obvious who people were and what they wanted. You know, characters had clear points of view. The action sequences were pretty well, you know, they weren't interesting, but they were okay. I could follow them. I could see what was going on. More or less. We'll get to that later. I liked the general lack of lightsabers. You know, I like the fact that this story took place, for the most part, independent of some of the other stuff that we've seen or that we're used to with Star Wars. And I was thinking about that video game we keep talking about, Shadows of the Empire for the N64. And like almost none of that, like almost nothing from that video game had to do with lightsabers and the Jedi. And it was just an entirely different point of view in the same universe. So that was kind of nice that they focused away from that. For the most part, I liked Han and Chewie's relationship. The kid was good, you know. Chewie was good, you know. They had a fun little rapport there. Donald Glover was okay, you know. He came as close as doing like a cheesy impression as you can without really going too far with it. And there was good fan service in this as well as bad, but there was good, like Rogue One, I think of just all the awkward, clunky, disgusting fan service in that movie. And this had better fan service in it. Stuff that like I didn't like, stuff that was kind of hammy, I didn't mind. It didn't beat you over the head. You know, there was nobody who was, you know, resurrected and brought back from the dead to be in this movie.
Oh, yeah,
you know, all that Rogue One nonsense. So, like, that stuff was really awkward. But here it was, some of it was better served than, you know, than others. But and there were bad stuff, too. We can get to that stuff later. But that's, you know, I think I appreciated 27% of the choices they made in the movie. And the rest of it were like, this is stupid and you didn't really need it and it didn't help you at all. And, you know, if anything, it made it worse. But, you know, they're running basically on nostalgia alone, and it's a decent enough fuel if you got a few other parts working for you, and they do. And so, you know, it was fine. What did you think?
I was very bored the whole movie. And the more bored I became, the angrier I got. To the point where the last 20 minutes, I wanted to just off myself and then, leave this earth because I hated it so much. I thought it was the most unnecessary, stupid movie I've seen in a while. I just was like, this is the dumbest thing. This is so lame. Nothing is interesting. You know, let's watch them walk from one side of the screen to the other. Oh, now they're talking. Okay, whatever. Now they're shooting each other. All right, fine. It was horrible. I hated it.
Now, be honest.
Yeah.
Don't sugarcoat it. Don't hold anything back. I mean, no. If you had seen this irrespective of the other movies, would it have been as bad? And I think that's what people are mostly complaining about is like...
Yes, sure it would have.
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand. Everyone's like, well, you know, it was fine. It was meh. It was okay. No, it wasn't. It was completely stupid. Every single decision everyone made no sense to me. They acted like robots or cardboard cutouts. Everything had to fill some sort of preconceived notion about what Han Solo said in the first three movies. And if you don't know what he's talking about, then you're sitting here going, none of this makes any sense to me. Like, I would have shuddered to bring my wife to this because she would have been so lost. You know?
No, that's true. They're definitely trying to plug in a lot of holes and, you know, I mean, let's talk about the big one, the Kessel Run. They're talking about that one line in a movie that was filmed in 1976 or 75 at that point, basically made up a third of this movie. So one thing that George Lucas wrote down, you know, 40 years ago is now cost them $100 million.
Yeah.
That's amazing when you think about it.
Well, they don't have a very deep well to draw from, so the botched line of a script that people just were like, yeah, I wonder what that really means. It means he didn't know what he was talking about when he filmed it. That's all that means. And so to justify it, they have this ridiculous action sequence. And I guess it's clever, maybe. But at the same time, it doesn't take away or add to anything. It's just a bunch of stuff that happened.
It's actually not clever. And that's kind of what was really frustrating. So, all right, the line, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, from the original Star Wars movie was that, Luke Skywalker asks Han Solo in the cantina, you know, is your ship fast? And he says, you know, it'll make 0.5 past light speed. And so, and at some point says, you know, did the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs? So a parsec, as we all now know, is a unit of distance and not time. But like you just said, Lucas didn't know that, and it sounded good, and so he left it in, and nobody really knew anything about this, and so they didn't correct him. And in this movie, the idea was that this junk-filled region of space is so, for whatever reason, filled with debris or, you know, gases and other nebulous type things, and there's a course through it to get from outside of the nebula to the spice mines of Kessel, and that course takes 20 parsecs. And so in this movie, what happens is that, you know, they come across the Imperial ship and they go, oh no, what do we do? And Han's like, I know, we'll just go through the briar patch and we'll come out the other side and it'll be fine. And he'll just use his piloting skills to navigate around things quickly. And that's what they mean by he did the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. They kind of retconned that. So that the idea was that he down a different route out of this thing, and you normally nobody could survive doing that, and they almost didn't. Great, fine. That actually makes sense, except for the fact that that has nothing to do with the speed of the ship, which is what the original conversation was about in the original movie. So they didn't solve anything. They made an interesting bit of story around that, such that if you know maybe he was trying to be clever 40 years ago, and you know you could think of the character saying that kind of thing, and if you were really deep in the know, it would be impressive to you. But as it was, it still doesn't make any sense because again, distance, not time.
Right.
Anyway, so what in particular, besides the fact that nobody had any clear motivation to do anything besides what was already preordained, did you find troubling?
Everything after the first 16 minutes. So in the beginning of the movie, Han Solo is like a pickpocket thief kind of. It's funny to me because I just finished reading Oliver Twist with my students, where Oliver Twist joins up with a gang of pickpockets led by an old man who teaches them how to steal for him. And that's basically what this is, and that, you know, some giant slug creature or whatever on this miserable planet.
Yeah, who's mentioned in like the title cards and then is disposed of rather quickly.
Yeah, well, it's just a setup. You know, he's working for this person and he gets a big score and he's going to take his girlfriend and they're going to run out on this alien thing and try to escape and live a life. Okay, fine. And they get to the airport with their score and they're trying to get through the checkpoints. And they get separated and he has to, you know, like she gets dragged back and he is allowed to go. And you know, I'll come back. All right. He signs up with the Empire to be a pilot. And then everything after that just nosedives. And I was like, wait a minute, because the next scene jumps to him in some sort of battle on some planet that they're trying to conquer. And he doesn't know which way he's going. And his first instinct is to leave. Because he just doesn't want to be there for no real reason. Like he kind of makes a passing mention to, you know, this isn't really our planet and we're just sort of doing what we're supposed to be. And I was supposed to be a pilot, but they demoted me to a grunt and now I just want to leave. And everything from that snowballs into, I'm going to go over here now because the plot needs me to go left. Okay. So he leaves that planet. He signs up with people. He meets his girlfriend. They don't talk about anything whatsoever. They don't talk about where they've been, why they didn't come back, what their past has been like, what they're planning to do. They just go on a mission together.
I think that was one
thing after the other. I was like, oh my God, they're not even going to talk?
Yeah, that was awkward. But at the same time, given who she is at that point.
Who is she at that point?
She says, the guy says, the overacting Paul Bellamy says that she's his lieutenant. She's introduced to Woody Harrelson as, you know, this is my lieutenant, Kira.
Right. She's pretty much another character now. It's only been 3 years. And up until that point, you're supposed to picturing her, because this is how Han Solo pictures her, as this helpless person that I left behind. Maybe she's got a grudge against that. Maybe she's upset that maybe she thinks I'm dead. I mean, it just doesn't come up. They just become like, hey, how's it going? Oh, hey, you work for him now? Can you get me a meeting? It just, whoosh. I couldn't believe it. I still can't believe it. Because that's how every character interacts with one another. It's just, I have to do this. I have to do that.
Yeah, I guess. So clarity of motivation doesn't necessarily mean that it's deep motivation. It's just, this is, they're following obvious plot points forward.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
And so, I don't know. I wasn't confused by anything. I just...
It's not confusing. It's just stupid.
Not, well, okay, fine. But half the time we're talking about things where it's just like, why did they do that? I have no... You know, like, that. Like, I can see why she would actually make that conversation as awkward as she did. I mean, he sees her and he grabs her and he kisses her And she's just like, okay, and then let's just have a conversation. As if, I mean, to me, 3 years is a long time. And I was surprised they didn't get into it because so much has happened, obviously, given their present circumstances. So the fact that she's avoiding that, to me, you know, kind of kept her steeped in mystery the whole time. And she remained like that for most of the film. You know, that...
It doesn't feel like she's holding back as an emotional thing because he doesn't ask her anything.
That's true.
So, like, it's not even like, you know, how did you get here? What have you been doing? Are you part of this gang? Because she has the tattoo that she sort of hides. You know, he just sort of shrugs. It's like, oh, you got off. I was coming back for you, but here we are.
Mm-hmm.
There's no emotional core to any of the humans in the entire movie. They're all just emotionless, going through the motions, cardboard cutout things, which makes it impossible for me to care about them because I'm not emotionally invested whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge chunk of time where he was in the Imperial Army. And then within 10 minutes, he's not anymore. And I mean, that's kind of a big deal. How does that change your thinking, your motivations, your feelings towards the Empire? I'm always stunned in these newer movies how, like, especially in those first 15, 20 minutes where, like, you're seeing stormtroopers, like, push people around and break up families and, like, shoot people in dark alleyways. I'm like, oh, yeah, stormtroopers, they're evil. And it kind of just gets, like, brushed aside later on.
Well,
it's very jarring.
Two things. First off, they do that because that's essentially fan service. That's people saying, you know, this shouldn't be a Disney attraction. You know, the Empire is scary. Why don't they make these films scary anymore? And so they go, okay, fine, we will. And they throw these little things in there that are terrifying, but then they just kind of move right along. Like, don't worry about that guy who got shot in the head for no reason, or these kids who got ripped from their mother's arms in this sort of Ellis Island of places. Like, they do that just to kind of shut people up about, you know, making the Empire evil again. But, yeah, the ultimate problem with Han Solo is that he never changes.
I'd say none of them changed.
Yeah.
They're all the same.
I mean,
Lando... If they didn't die.
Like, Lando maybe a little bit, but not much. But you're right. Yeah, they all kind of remain pretty much who they are from the beginning. And one of the things that I heard on a podcast was someone was saying, why do they all have the same exact background? You know, Luke and Rey and you know, the character from the previous, like, they all have this sort of, you know, come from the streets Aladdin type, you know, backstory to them where they're living in squalor or some kind of just non-ideal condition. What, you know, how is it they all have this exact same sort of backstory to them? And this person suggested that, you know, wouldn't it be more interesting if he didn't have that, if he came from a more affluent background and ended up doing this instead? Wouldn't that have, you know, something happened to make him more cynical? I mean, you know, which he never actually becomes. He just kind of starts off like that. But if he was to begin it kind of brash and frat boyish and, you know, taking risks and doing this and that and then falling in with you know, with some bad types when he had promise, that would have made more sense. That's for that scene where Kira says to him, I know what you really are, you're the good guy. And he's like, no, I'm not, I'm the outlaw, which was a really stupid scene because, you know, who the hell talks like that? And, you know, if you are, then you are, but, you know, because his behavior so far is as if he's an outlaw. And she's telling him that he's fighting something, even though he's not. That's who he is. He's been like that the whole time. He likes her, and he's, you know, selfless when it comes to her, but that's it. Nothing else. And Chewie, as that develops. You know.
See, here's where it's... Because there's a clear... first of all, the old character is Harrison Ford, so it's hard to get out of that shadow. So he has that against him. Also, he was a certain way in Star Wars in which he was this cynical, cocky, I only care about money kind of thing. And then he has that redemption at the end. And so the only way to do it differently would be to have him start, you know, maybe as like a richer kind of guy who's just, you know, I don't really care. And he, and something happens that hardens him even more. Or you could have him be a good guy who becomes a cynical jerk at the end, which is, I think, what they were trying to do. But he never really stops being a good guy. Like, he's always a good guy, you know, and he puts off this exterior that no one buys. Everyone sees through it because they're always constantly telling him, you've got to be harder. You've got to shoot first. You got to not trust anybody. And he's like, well, I do. And at the end, you know, he's the same.
I think it's, I mean, yeah, I think that's largely because, you know, they're going to make two more films out of this, theoretically. Although, if the box office is any indication, they're not.
No, I don't think they will. Because I don't know what else you do. You know, it was a pretty dull story of how he got his ship, sort of, maybe.
Yeah, and met the bear.
Yeah, he met the bear. You know, and...
That's a good idea, Bear. Let's do that.
It was just so hard to care when you're just watching like the day of a life of this kid, you know, and nobody else had any other interest. I mean, Woody Harrelson's character was, you think there's something to him, but all I care about is money, and he never changes. Even when his supposed former lover gets blown up off a bridge, it's like a wink and a shrug, like, yep, oh, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, not much really done with that. Yeah, no, there. Yeah, there was just. I mean, the way that I knew that there was nothing really to this film was that after every action sequence, that's when I would get bored. So, like, I didn't mind that. Like, the train thing was fun. The Kessel Run was fun. The, you know, the liberation of the miners. I mean, like, all of these set pieces in the moment are pretty good, and they're watchable, but. When they're over, I would go, oh, well, just stop and take a breather and look at my watch and okay. And like, yeah. So like,
I had that feeling during the action sequences also, like at the same time, because everyone in those scenes comes at it like they're in later movies. So I know they're all okay, except for the robot maybe.
Yeah, it was very hard to build tension.
Yeah, like I know Chewie is not falling off this train. And yet we're watching him almost get hit by a rock and fall off to his death. I'm like, he's getting out of this. So yeah. I don't care. And the other two that die during that train heist are in it for, I don't know, 10 minutes. So I don't really know these people.
Yeah. I mean, they try to kill off characters, I think. You know, they get rid of the expendables as often as they possibly can to show, oh, look, the stakes are high. You know, this guy didn't make it out of this heist, which is awkward and stupid because, like, well, okay, fine, but we know we can't kill these other people. So if you're going to put them in a situation, better to put them in one where failure won't mean death, but it's equally distasteful or also distasteful. And they didn't really do that. They just kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
What'd you think of L3?
I thought it was idiotic.
All right, so here's a question. Were they making fun of that? Like, so L3, if those of you weren't paying attention because you were zonked out on boredom like Phil, you know, this is this woke robot who's, you know, advocating for droid equal rights, which, by the way, this has been a thing since the first Star Wars where, like, the bartender tells C-3PO and R2-D2, oh, you know, get out here. We don't serve your kind in here. So there's this awkward racism when it comes to droids that's pervasive throughout this franchise that makes fuck all sense to me. Because why would you be actively antagonistic to robots?
Yeah, I don't think it runs through. I think it's just that one scene.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't come up. The thing is with the robots in these movies is that they're not alive. They're just in the background. They're just things that do things for you.
Right. They're not like data.
Right.
Or anything.
You know, and then so you have this robot that's running around like droids should be free and just do whatever they want and equal rights. And it was, you couldn't tell if because there's a lot of annoying talk about social justice warriors and Star Wars and diversity thrown in your face, that this was some sort of parody about that.
It felt like it, though, right? Like it. I mean, there's no way it would have been, given, you know, who the film's producers are, who Kathleen Kennedy is. There's no way they greenlit a character whose entire purpose was to make fun of the whole, you know, Me Too woke social justice moment that we're in right now. It's just, it's not possible. They would have thrown the whole film down the toilet and eaten the $400 million they spent to make and advertise this thing before they did that. But that's what this really came across as far as I could tell.
It, to me, it came across like just a gag that didn't go right.
Yeah, and exactly.
Not to parody anything, they probably just thought, like, wouldn't it be funny if we had a robot that was aware of the fact that the other robots are always doing things for people? Wouldn't that, and like was constantly bringing it up, wouldn't that be a funny thing? And it's not. I don't know who thought that, but like, okay, so two things. So I don't understand why they always give all the personality to the robots. They did this with Rogue One, where that giant tall robot was like really kind of like cynical and dry and had this like British humor to him.
Right.
You know, and all the humans around him were as dull as a cardboard box. And the same thing here. You know, I didn't laugh once this entire movie. I never thought it was funny. And I'm sitting here going, like, how come the robot has more personality? Is it because they can get killed and you don't have to worry about, like, offending people? Like, the robot has dirty jokes and there's no real robots in life? You know, like, these human traits should be dispersed among humans as well. But also, in almost every single science fiction thing ever, robots don't have their own personalities unless they suddenly develop sentience, which, and then it becomes a problem. So the idea that this robot is running around arguing for equal rights, my first thought is, who programmed this robot to talk that way? You know, like, C-3PO comes off a construction line. They're made a certain way. And when they gain their own sense of consciousness, then it becomes Terminator. So the robots aren't like that in Star Wars. Yeah, so I'm sitting here going, like, why do they talk like this?
The line between C-3PO and Skynet is very thin.
Right. So, like, they're all looking at the robot, like, rolling their eyes. Well, just rip out the parts of her circuit boards that are making her talk this way.
She's obviously malfunctioning, guys.
Yeah. So, like, the whole time to me, I'm like, I don't understand why this robot even exists.
It's also, like, it's extremely unhelpful because they go to, like, to this, you know, planet to get the magic space fuel. And she fucks the whole thing up, you know. It's just it's like in the middle of it, she's like, "All right, rebellion! Everybody, you know, open up all the doors and kill these." You know, like, it just becomes chaos.
And she starts making all the other robots, like, you know, go crazy and do whatever they wanted. I'm like, "What is the? Are they trying to make a statement? Do they think it would be funny?" And then they had like the death scene with the robot, and I was like,
"Yeah, that was." I mean,
it was awkward.
Whenever I see something like that, I kind of have to think, well, what was it like to film that? Like,
yeah,
for Donald, because there was this great, I heard a great Tom Hanks interview years ago where he was talking about the movie The Edge with Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins, which is about two guys who are not friends who crash land somewhere in the Alaskan wilderness. And they're like they're confronted by like a giant Kodiak bear, and they have to work together to kill the bear. And there's this great scene where the two of them it's lashing rain, it's really heavy, and like one of them is trying to gin the other guy up, like, what are we gonna do? We're gonna kill the bear. And Tom Hanks is like, that is the greatest acting scene of all time. Could you imagine being there? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. It's 8 degrees outside. You're soaking wet. It's, you know, like, it's raining on you, and you're trying to act in all that. And I was like, oh, so you think of this very differently than I do, because this is what you do for a living. And ever since then, I've tried to look at really awkward scenes in movies and been like, well, what's it like to film that? To stand there holding this piece of plastic and try to have a moment, you know, staring at this thing with all the crew around you and Teamsters over there eating a donut and, like, you know, it's like sex scenes in TV shows and movies. Like, you know, they always ask you, do you ever, you know, get aroused when you're in a sex scene? They're like, no, I'm freezing. There are 80 people there, you know, like, no one's comfortable. She's got this merkin on. Like, it's, you know, so I thought about that during that really awkward death scene where he's got a... And apparently there was some kind of interview with the writers or the Kasdan's son about, you know, what if Lando was pansexual?
Because he loves the robot?
No, this is just like a thing some guy threw out in like a press junket interview. And the guy's like, yeah, sure, why not? Pansexual. I'm not even sure what that means. And like then it blew up. And so now everyone's seeing this the scene with the robot and how the robot like is in love with him, and you know,
because I thought he didn't like the robot, he was always rolling his eyes at it,
right? And then you realize that he really had some kind of feelings for it when she died,
whatever.
I don't know, it was dumb and confusing, and I don't know that they intended it to be as dumb and confusing as it was.
Yeah,
so
I didn't like the robot.
No. did not care for it.
No. Mm.
Could you see much of the film?
No. The cinematography was bad.
People complaining about that. Yeah, it was. You couldn't see a damn thing.
It was so dark.
I mean, like
everything was just black.
I'd heard that going in, so I was looking for it. And it wasn't as bad, I guess, because I had, you know, thought it'd be like, you know, watching The Godfather at a drive-in. But it, you know, but yeah, you really couldn't.
I mean, it was worse in certain scenes than others, but yeah. And I didn't realize that when I went to see it, but there were certain scenes where I was like, man, I can't see a thing. Like they're in that casino thing in the beginning, and the background is yellow. And so whenever they were in the foreground, I just literally couldn't see them.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow, is it me? Is it the projector? And then when I went home, it was like some idiot didn't film this right. Ron.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this is not good. But I don't know what happened there.
So then there's Darth Maul who shows up at the end.
Yeah. Remember him, everybody?
Well, if you're a loyal fan of the Clone Wars cartoon.
And who isn't?
Yeah. So that really pissed me off. And I was confused at first. I was like, oh, it's another guy who looks like Darth Maul. I guess they're like a race of people, and he's a bad guy. And then he does this stupid, awkward thing where he holds his hands out, and his lightsaber flies over to him for no reason. And then
Did it fly over there? I just thought he had it in his hand.
No, he did the whole like force teleport or telekinesis thing. And had it fly over to him. Then he turned it on. I'm like, you're on a phone call, basically. What are you doing exactly?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was really dumb. So apparently he survived that fall into the bottomless pit after being sawed in half. And got some robot legs. And he's fine now.
Yeah. And he rose to the head of this criminal empire, and they threw him in there. And I wasn't surprised. I was more just like at that point, I was completely zoned out. Nothing had held my interest. I didn't care. And they threw him in there, and I was just like, oh, okay. And everyone was like, oh, that means they're going to have a spinoff with him, and it's going to be some sort of other movie. And my thought was just like, it was just some sort of fan service-y thing. And the people on all those other podcasts and online, them complaining, you know, like, well, now I have to watch this cartoon show to figure out what the hell this character is doing there or who he even is. I'm not going to do that.
Well, I wasn't going that I had to go. Too. What's that?
And that was my thought too. I am not going to watch this cartoon show to get a better understanding of your movie. Yeah, that's your job.
Yeah, I would never do that, but I was really annoyed that I had to go look it up because I was like, well, what the hell was that? Because the credits, he's listed as Maul. Mm. They dropped the Darth. I guess he's no longer a Darth. But yeah, that was really frustrating because I was like, oh, I should probably go Google that now. And I did. And more of my time was wasted. But here's my one of my big complaints about this was that the inclusion of Darth Maul into it and the whole business about the crime syndicates and the Empire working together and the pirates that you meet in the beginning who seem scary and are actually just children, apparently, once the girl takes off her mask and she's like, you know, we went from like big imposing guy with a crazy helmet to like a 5'6" tall girl with really curly hair.
That was annoying.
Yeah. And the whole idea that, like, they're the rebellion. So, the thing about this that bugs me the most is that for all their time and money and art direction, they've built a very small world. You know, we talk about, you know, the concept of world building and how in certain movies it's pretty good and with certain franchises, it's done better. And people have been talking about this as if, as if Star Wars had a really deep and, you know, extensive sort of universe wherein all these things happen. And you pointed out before, and you're right, that, like, why is it that the fate of the galaxy always hinges on the same three people, you know, from the same two families or whatever? You know, it seems like a lot of pressure on this one clan.
Yeah.
And here, it's, you know, there's sort of more of that. Like, they're not separating anybody. You know, if the crime syndicates work with the Empire most of the time, and Darth Maul's connected to that, you know, and the good pirates are, you know, that's the beginning of the rebellion kind of thing. Like, I don't know. They don't give these characters or these ideas space to breathe and take advantage of the fact that you have a whole galaxy and you have a lot of pretty creative people. Can't you think of something entirely different to talk about within this universe that would be interesting? And the answer is no. We want to talk about the same exact stuff all the time. And anything that looks different, we're going to try to find a way to loop it back in and connect it to the stuff that we already know.
Yeah. So the nostalgia well is not as deep as people think. And I think I've said that. And that's why I was always complaining that they just recycled the same things. You know, and I was like, yeah, show us something new. And they never have. And it doesn't look like they ever will because they can't. You know, you can't stray too far from when you only have certain things. And now I think that this movie is really proof of that they can't. Because when you watch it, never once did I think I was watching Harrison Ford as a young man. Not once. I always just thought here was just some guy. And if you watch that character and you, let's say you just follow with Woody Harrelson's character for most of the movie, you know, when you take out all the references in Darth Maul, all you have is a space action movie. And there are better ones, like one called Serenity.
Yeah.
And other sorts of movies that take place with cowboy guys in space, you know, gunslingers and things. Because they did this with the Last Jedi when they had the lightsaber fight in the ship, that the other guards had laser type weapons and Paul Bettany's character had some sort of laser dagger. Real gangsters wouldn't have that. They'd have guns. They would shoot each other. It's faster to just shoot someone. So most characters had guns. They were doing very run-of-the-mill type stuff with crime syndicates. There is no Empire. There are no magical wizards with laser swords. How is this any different from any other action movie? Well, it really isn't. And there's nothing distinctive about it. So when all this time I've been saying, like, do something new, pick different characters, then it's not really Star Wars, because you have to keep looping in the elements that we know to make it Star Wars, and they've been done to death. So maybe give it a rest.
Yeah, you know, the guy from Red Letter Media, you know, had a very good way of putting it succinctly. He said it's an intellectually bankrupt franchise. There's nothing else to it.
Right. I mean, and the politics that they struggle with the politics when they don't, you know, Empire bad, Rebels good. They solved that problem in 1983. Okay. And now it's owned by a giant kid-friendly corporation. So if you want to see Shades of Grey, well, you're not going to. They're just, so we have to just reboot everything and make it Giant Evil Empire with a different name and Rebels with a different name. Well, that, you know, we all know how that's going to play out. Can you make that play out for 30 years straight? I doubt it. So what are you supposed to do? I don't know.
Mm.
Not watch it. And I think that's sort of what's happening, is that people are getting that fatigue. You're pounding them into the ground on this.
Well, maybe, but let's talk about money for a minute. Is that why this didn't do well?
I think it was a lot of things. Because I know that different websites and different podcasts have multiple explanations as to why the movie hasn't done well. I think it's a combination of all of those things. You know?
Because if you look at the numbers, so without getting into the, you know, adjusted for inflation business, this came in number five for you know, most money made during an opening weekend with $84 million. Number four was Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, everybody wanted to see how it ended.
Yeah, I can get that, but we also sat. We had all just sat through Attack of the Clones, so we weren't that invested in it. Side note, what I find really interesting is if you look at the adjusted for inflation, the grosses for these movies. So the first one is the original, Star Wars, $1.3 billion is what it made over the course of its run. Now, it's sort of hard to, you know, figure out, because there's factors there. Movies ran for longer back then. They weren't in the theater, but then, you know, ticket prices were less. I don't know. There's different ways to look at it. But the first five movies, like the top earning movies in Star Wars, adjusted for inflation, are Star Wars, number one, number two, The Force Awakens, number three, The Phantom Menace, number four, Return of the Jedi, number five, The Empire Strikes Back. So what you have there is the three original movies and the two movies that were the first after like a decade or a decade and a half. And that's where all the energy is for these movies. It's, you know, for the original trilogy, because they're good. You know, some are better than others, but they're still good. And you starve people of this content for 10 to 15 years and you'll make a lot of money. That's it. Like, once that happens, we begin to lose interest dramatically. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, six and seven are Last Jedi and Rogue One. So, yeah, there is still some interest in this. And I think there was more interest in those movies because they were kind of different, because they were done by Disney and not by by George Lucas. And everyone was kind of excited about that. But that's telling to me that, like, the people are, you know, more excited about those movies because, you know, they're either new or it's been a long time and we're hoping for something better that, you know, might be as much fun as the first three.
Yeah, well, you can't go home again, as they say.
No, you can't.
And these movies all feel like wheel spinning. Like, what is the point of, what are they building towards? What's the ultimate destination?
Yeah.
You know, people don't like to go into movies. The only thing comparable is the Marvel films. Because every other movie has always been like a trilogy or maybe one extra sequel. There's an ending to these things. And then The Marvel movies just seem to keep going. But even they have like big chapters. Like, you know, you have the smaller movies, the solo things, and then you have an Avengers, and then it starts again with something different. And at least that's something like I can check in and check out versus, you know, an endless stream of Star Wars movies. Well, it's like watching The Walking Dead every week. Oh, where's this going?
Yeah. No, Marvel does it extremely well. And somebody asked today, how soon do you think it'll be before they fire Kathleen Kennedy and hand the whole thing over to Kevin Feige?
They'll never do that.
I don't know.
No, he's too busy making money with Marvel. He'll never switch.
Well, it's the same company.
Yeah, but it's harder. It's not. It's company doesn't make a difference.
Apparently, he said that he's really interested in it. Like all of his, you know, of his film sort of enthusiasm comes from Star Wars.
Wow.
So I wonder, were they to offer it to him, if he wouldn't say, "I think I can crack this egg."
Yeah, I mean, Penguin Publishing prints little kid books, and it prints, you know, Charles Dickens, but it doesn't mean you should do both if you're one person.
So. Yeah, no, I don't think it's a good idea, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, this movie apparently, so they were talking about this on the Weekly Substandard. So, all right, the budget was estimated at $250 million. That's fine. But then there's at least another $150 million just to promote the thing.
Yeah, well, that's most movies have a huge promotion budget.
Right. And then so, okay, so this movie is going to make, so far it's grossed $115. But, you know, that's a gross. You know, that's not what the studio takes home. They have to pay the movie theaters, first of all. And, you know, that varies wildly based on what country you're in. You know, they have to pay off the people who, you know, took points on this instead of getting paid a salary. I'm sure there weren't many of them, but there's some. And so we're talking about, you know, a $400 million expenditure. And if it's only going to make $300 million, then you've lost $100 million on a Star Wars movie. And up to this point, no one really considered that to be possible. This was just like the golden goose that kept on giving. Like, you know, everyone was going to want to see a Star Wars film.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could make as many of them as you want, and, you know, kind of. And it's probably true that after a while they'll end up in the black for real when you know factor in the lunch boxes and the bed sheets and all the other junk that they're going to produce with these characters on them. And so you know Legos, for example, is a huge area for them. So, like, no one's poor, but, you know, after a while you have to justify spending $250 million on making one movie if you're not going to make that money back. And that's getting harder to do.
Well, maybe they should stop.
It's because by law, we all have to go see them, too.
Was there anything that you liked particularly?
Yeah, I mean, I liked some of the goofy stuff, you know. I like that he shot first. You know, that was the thing when he's having that conversation. Next thing you know, Woody has the hole in his chest, and
yes, and everybody was like, "He shot first." That went over my head. I was just like, "Yeah, of course he did," because that guy was going to kill him. So I didn't read as much into it as I apparently should have.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff like that. Like, he's saying, "I've got a good feeling about this," is the inverse of "I've got a bad feeling about this."
Yeah.
When Lando says, "I hate you," he says, "I know."
Mm-hmm.
There's all those little.
Yeah. It just, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was just as bad as Rogue One. Everyone's like, "Oh, it's not as much fan service." It was just as much fan service. What are people talking about? Half the movie was stuff cribbed from the last ones.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I mean, I can't overestimate how awful it was to have, you know, CGI people who this looked terrible in Rogue One, and that totally threw me off. And it, like, the thing about Rogue One that pissed me off was that it was stuff that I couldn't have known what it was from, but I knew it was a thing. So, like, there was, you know, Easter eggs and callbacks in Rogue One that the only reason I know that they were Easter eggs or callbacks was because they looked awkward or stupid where they were. I went, oh, that's got to be a thing that I don't know. And now I'm distracted from that because, you know, there's something I'm thinking about that's not the plot of the movie because, you know, some kind of weird line was delivered or a strange sound I heard versus this where it's obvious. I'm okay with the obvious stuff. I mean, it's not super obvious, like the you know, getting shot or shooting the guy first kind of thing. It's not subtle, but it's not buried under, you know, what like mountains of, you know, nerddom trying to figure out like some obscure thing from.
I mean, it took like every line because I remember when he wins the Millennium Falcon at the very end of the movie, and he says, "I beat you fair and square, fair and square." He says it like three times. I was like, "Oh, I get it. You don't have to hammer that point home." And the Empire Strikes Back, he makes a line, "Oh, hey, you want it to me, fair and square, remember?" Like, what is that, a thing? That's a thing we're doing now? Okay, it's a thing.
Yeah, like, so that stuff was really awkward, but the other
there
ones...
There was a lot of it, is my point.
The dice thing, too, was pissing me off. Like, yeah. That was a minor piece of set dressing from the first movie. It became, like, the moral center of this film.
Yeah, and it doesn't even get talked about, which was really just, you know, to sum up, my general distaste for the film was the fact that there was no emotional stakes, not a lot of logic when it comes to character acting, like why they're doing what they do, and no reason for the audience to care. And that term gets thrown around a lot these days. And what I mean by not caring is that I'm watching people that I can't identify with emotionally. You know, why is it that we read Shakespeare 400 years later? Because I can see myself in Romeo and Juliet and Macbeth and whatever. If I'm watching this guy run around on a train or at a casino full of gangsters, and he's not giving me any reason for that, he's just doing it, then I'm just watching him. I might as well be watching a painting. I can't invest. I can't get emotionally attached. And the entire movie was that way. So I was bored.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there was anything I really liked at all. I was zoned out. I didn't care.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought the kid did a pretty good job. You know, I think the whole point that, which I thought was, I don't know if this is a good idea or a bad idea, but he was saying how, like, he's not doing an impression of Harrison Ford because you can't.
Yeah, and that was fine because I think that would have been distracting.
Yeah, but it's I like him and Robert Redford. You can't do an impression of these guys. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible. Their whole thing is that they're very malleable actors. They can play anything, you know, to the point now where they're so iconic that they can't play anybody without being themselves. It's this weird thing. So like, Redford was in Captain America, what, two?
Yeah. And it was like, hey, Robert Redford's in this.
Yeah.
Why is he the head of this organization?
Was he moonlighting? What's he? Oh, yeah. He's playing. Oh, he's an actor, right? He's playing
because like someone else.
Yeah, he's just so clearly Robert Redford all the time, and you know, the same thing with Harrison Ford. Like he's past that point in his career. And in the zeitgeist where we can accept him as anybody but who he is. And so, you know, it's a lark to have him in Force Awakens because it's almost like anything they do becomes meta.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know if that's their fault, probably not, but that's just how it goes.
Well, that's when you so associate somebody with a character and they get trotted out 30 years later, like Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, there's Luke Skywalker. There he is.
Actually, I think he suffers from that less because, A, he doesn't look like he did back in 1977, and, B, he hasn't become as, you know, as big of a part of pop culture as Harrison Ford has. Mm. Harrison Ford is involved with, you know, several franchises that are not only important to people of a certain generation, but they're important to the craft of filmmaking. Like, we base a lot of, you know, decisions about what we go see and what we like based on, you know, Indiana Jones. Like, these were important things to our culture as a whole. And so there's no way to separate him from that.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, to put him in a movie where he's just playing Joe Blow, it's very hard. He's still just going to be being Harrison Ford no matter what. And, you know, it's nice work if you can get it. So good for him. But, so the kid can't do an impersonation of this guy. It's impossible. Billy D. Williams, on the other hand, is, you know, quite caricaturish, and therefore you can do an impersonation of him.
Well, yeah, he was a certain way, and Donald Glover did a fine job imitating that.
Yeah.
He was basically just more plot point, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, he was great in this. I'm like, what, for that 25 minutes he was in it where he didn't even talk? He just sat there looking surprised?
Yeah. Are you excited about any of the rumored upcoming films? Like the James Mangold version of Boba Fett?
How can you be? Of course not.
I don't know. I don't think you can be.
No.
Yeah, they're just making it rain. You get a movie, and you get a movie, and you get three movies, and just pass them out like hors d'oeuvres. You know, I'll take one if you're just going to give them out. Anybody? If you're just going to give this stuff to anybody, I'll take one.
Shit, I'll do it for half what they pay Ron Howard.
What had happened to the original guys? Do you know? Have you heard the story? The two guys that were, you know, had begun this project and then had to be fired.
Creative differences.
Did they want to make a good movie?
I think that they wanted to make a more of a parody kind of movie. Like, they're the two biggest things that they've ever done are the Lego Movie and 21 Jump Street, which are movies. They have plots and characters, but they also have meta commentary running through them. Yeah. You know, here's a movie about something stupid as we do this movie, you know, and I think that's probably what they were planning on doing, and that doesn't fit into whatever sort of universe they've constructed of these films. Like, you have an expectation for these things. So,
yeah.
Although I'm sure they didn't want to budge, and they really just got Ron Howard to do it. You know, who will do assembly line work for you?
It's about a robot. What the hell's that line?
A killer robot driving instructor that travels back in time for some reason. Ron Howard's attached to direct.
No, I'm not.
Best friends are talking by.
You've done it again. So that it's interesting that that's what, you know, why they probably got canned. Because one of the things that helps Marvel out tremendously is the fact that all their movies, not all of them, but they're not all the same. They're different. You know, Ant-Man, I mean, they're still kind of the same, but like Ant-Man is a heist movie. It's about this kind of a character. And Captain America 2, you know, well, Captain America 1 was a straight up war film, and the second movie was, you know, like a spy movie kind of thing. And so, like, they kind of play with genre a bit over there at Marvel. And can you do that with Star Wars? I don't think that you can. So much like, you know, the nostalgia well isn't all that deep, but there's not a lot of flexibility. Like you said, like, if you take all these things out, then it's just a space adventure film. It's not Star Wars. And why not just watch a better space adventure film? So there's nothing else. You can't fiddle with it like you can with Marvel, because everyone is so static.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
It's too bad.
Well, it is what it is.
Is it, though? All right. Well, if you, the audience, want to tell us what you thought of Solo, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 3DrinksInPod and tell us what you thought over there. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Click subscribe, tell your friends, leave that review, like us on Facebook, email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. That's all with letters that time. And not sure if we're going to be doing anything new for a bit. I think the next big thing coming out is Ant-Man and the Wasp or The Incredibles 2,
yeah,
one of the two.
We're into summer season.
So there's kind of a lull here, though, if you notice, like this. You know, maybe three movies coming out in the next 2 months that I've got on the calendar. That's not a lot for 8 weeks. So we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
All right. As always, please drink responsibly, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Yep. Take care.
Bye.